Could we continue this evening in our exploration of the seven factors for awakening? Tonight's talk is on tranquility. So the first factor, mindfulness, of course, needs to be in place for the other factors to become developed. The first element of developing mindfulness is mindfulness of the breathing. So we put the mind on the breath, we keep the mind on the breath by using directed thought, by being ardent in practicing directed thought, and then gradually our mindfulness expands to include the full body. As mindfulness establishes, then we are able to develop the second factor, analysis of qualities, which manifests at first through evaluation of the breath. So we're analyzing the quality of the breath. What's the breath like? Where is there dis-ease in the breath? Where is there ease in the breath? That process gradually moves into cultivating an easeful breath. And analysis of qualities develops as we begin to analyze the body, see where there's ease in the body, see where there's a flow of energy in the body, beginning to cultivate that easeful flow of energy in the body. It manifests through these steps of directed thought, evaluation, and that third step of spreading the energy, developing that flow of energy through the body. So those three elements of mindfulness, analysis of qualities, and then the effort that we put into the development of mindfulness and analysis of qualities, and the effort that we put into abandoning the hindrances, which is so important because we can't develop mindfulness and analysis of qualities to the degree that we need to unless we make the effort to abandon the hindrances. So as we begin to develop those three qualities, those three factors, then the qualities of concentration begin to arise. They're really the effects that come from the causes of developing mindfulness, analysis of qualities, and effort. So the effect, the quality, the jhana quality of rapture begins to emerge. This quality that manifests in the energy that we feel in the body. Sometimes we call it breath energy. Last week I talked about it as life energy, that we begin to have an awareness, or we look to see, and the arising of this energy, this flow of energy through the body. Sometimes it's very soft, a tingling energy through the body. Sometimes it's stronger. As the rapture, this quality of energy, of lightness in the body begins to manifest, you know, we can't force that to happen. We cultivate the causes of directed thought and evaluation, mindfulness and analysis of quality so that it arises. As it arises, we can cultivate it, just as a plant or a flower arises in a garden, we can cultivate that plant or flower. We can't make the plant or flower, but we can cultivate it as it arises. We can develop the conditions so that it arises, and when it arises, as it begins to grow, we can cultivate it by watering it and seeing that it gets enough light, fertilizer, so on and so forth. So we cultivate this quality of rapture, of this flow of energy in the body, by putting our mind on it. So we put our mind on the rapture, and that's a cause for its development, just like the shining of the light on the plant is a cause for its growth. So by cultivating the rapture in this way, we are allowing it to develop, allowing it to spread so that it begins to manifest as a smooth flow of energy throughout the body. So there's this quality, what's sometimes called pervasive rapture, or this quality pervades the body. And we can again cultivate that by putting our mind on it. You know, through developing mindfulness and analysis of qualities and effort, the rapture begins to emerge. We can cultivate the rapture. We can cultivate it so that we allow it to spread throughout the body. We begin to have this pervasive quality of rapture and energy in the body. Part of the cultivating of the rapture seeing to it that it's just right, because sometimes the energy, the rapture in the body, the PT, can be dissonant and can be too strong. It can have rough edges to it. So one of the things that it's important to do in the cultivation of the rapture is to develop an easeful, a very soft and a pleasant flow of energy in the body. And we can do that through inclining the mind, sort of like turning a dimmer switch, just kind of allowing the energy to soften if we need to allow it to soften. And as the energy in the body flowing throughout the body, it's just right, and we begin to shave away some of those rough edges of it, then there's pleasure. Then there's the quality of pleasure begins to emerge. And as pleasure begins to emerge, and we can put our minds on pleasure, and, oh, there's pleasure. I can feel pleasure. I can feel it physically, but also as it manifests in a mental quality in the body that we may feel in the body. As the pleasure develops, as we soften the agitation that's in the body, the first thing that we're doing, of course, in developing the rapture is any agitation, dis-ease in the body is gradually dissipating. We're moving the energy through those areas where there's dis-ease. So the body begins to flow with that easeful energy. And if the energy gets a little too strong, we can soften it. So it's very pleasurable. So the agitation in the body begins to diminish, and we come into this place of pleasure, and then that leads to this quality of stillness. So this quality of inner silence as the agitation in the body begins to diminish, we begin to be able to ascertain the quality of inner silence or stillness in the body. So, this quality of stillness, of tranquility, is, we could say, the next step in the development of jhana, the development of the kind of concentration that we need to develop. So typically we have lots of agitation in the body. We have lots of agitation in the body, and typically we react to the agitation in the body. So that's why we're always moving and turning and shifting, and sometimes you see that in people, particularly when they're newer in meditation, not even so much if they're newer, they're moving a lot because the body is agitated and they're relating to that. As we begin to soothe the body, it has this healing quality. As we develop rapture, there's less and less agitation in the body, and there's more and more pleasure in the body, and we're happy just to be here and to be still, and we're not in such haste to do anything about the way the body feels. We're happy just to be here and just to be still. So this is kind of a very, this is a very important and beautiful part of the process of the development of the concentration. I remember very, very vividly, as I began to understand tranquility and stillness, one of my most vivid experiences of beginning to develop that understanding happened on, my first retreat at Insight Meditation Society over 20 years ago. And, I was quite agitated, for the first several days of the retreat. And I was sitting on my cushion and moving a lot and opening my eyes and looking around, you know, and all of that, you know, and I was kind of really kind of just this ball of agitation. Then that started to soften a little bit over, you know, 3 or 4 days as the mind began to settle down, the body began to settle down. And then there was a point that happened, and it was, you know, some one of those things I can just remember so vividly, where I just dropped all the agitation and I just dropped into a place of stillness. And the body wasn't moving at all, and it was very pleasant. And, you know, I didn't want to move because it was so pleasant. Why would I want to be in any other place other than this? And I came to begin to start to understand what tranquility was all about, and began to be able to connect into this quality of inner stillness, inner ease. So peaceful, so peaceful. You know, we're striving, if you will, to be able to be connected to that inner quality of tranquility. You know, my story is fairly graphic with that, in terms of me moving around a lot. But one of the ways, of course, that the tranquility manifests and is developed is as the agitation in the body begins to diminish. So that'll happen through the cultivation of the full body awareness, the cultivation of rapture, the spreading of the breath energy throughout the body. And, you know, we learn just to drop into this place of silence and stillness. So, you know, this is a really kind of important place in the meditation where we can really drop into stillness. Some people aren't able to have that kind of stillness if they have physical, neurological reasons why it's very difficult for them to be still. Those are exceptions. Most of us have the capacity to be very still. So it's something to think about as you think about your own practice, is, are you able to be still? You know, are we able to be still? I mean, this is very important to be able to develop, you know, stillness and tranquility. It's really hard to develop the deeper levels of concentration until we're able to be really still. You know, so I'm not saying, you know, just don't move if you have pain in the body. You know, then you may need to move or work with the pain. But a lot of the time there isn't any pain and we're just twitching and moving and, you know, reacting. You know, there's that quality of agitation. So can we learn to develop this kind of inner stillness? One of the ways that it's characterized in the teachings is the movement from heat to coolness. You know, the idea of, you know, agitation being sort of a hot state, and really as concentration deepens, it really has a quality of cooling, or cooling off, cooling down. So the Buddha in his description of jhana has a very beautiful and vivid description of this as he describes the development of jhana. He talks about it like this, and this is the quality that he's describing in the body. Just like a lake with spring water welling up from within, having no inflow from east, west, north, or south, and with the skies periodically supplying abundant showers so that the cool fount of water welling up from within the lake would permeate and pervade, suffuse, and fill it with cool waters, there being no part of the lake, and this is the metaphor for the body, unpervaded by the cool waters. Even so, the monk permeates and pervades, suffuses this very body with the rapture and pleasure born of composure. Born of composure. There is nothing of his entire body unpervaded by rapture and pleasure born of composure. So it's another way of thinking about what tranquility is this quality of being cool and composed, this inner composure. So tranquility, you know, really includes these two elements of the stilling of the body and, of course, the stilling of the mind. I mean, part of one of the reasons why we move around a lot, or we move to the degree that we do, is that the mind isn't still and the mind is agitated and it's reacting to slight discrepancies, diseases, dissonances that we're feeling in the body. So in order to develop tranquility, there needs to be a stilling of the body that really comes about largely through the cultivation of easeful breath, easeful body, the cultivation of rapture and pleasure in the body. But there's still work to be done on the side of the mind. You know, in order for tranquility to fully develop, we have to still the mind. You know? So, you know, this begins, of course, in our meditation, you know, and you know, this is largely why I was able to develop that, partly why I was able to develop that tranquility on that first retreat, is the mind begins to still. You know, all the thinking in the mind, I made that effort over time to bring the attention and the mind back to the breath, stay with the breath. You know, that's how we learn to still the mind, is by keeping it on the meditation object. So the mind, you know, just the opposite of the agitation, you know, the non-agitated, tranquil mind is the mind that's jumping all over the place, the agitated mind. So through the breath meditation, we still the mind. You know, and of course we can get so far in our meditation practice by, you know, making this effort to be mindful of the breathing. In order to get to the level that we need to get to in terms of to truly still the mind, we have to address the hindrance of restlessness. The hindrance of restlessness is standing in opposition, if you will, to stillness. Kind of makes sense, right? You know, so we can think of restlessness sometimes as agitation in the body. You know, I'd like to think about it as the agitated mind, or the mind that's just proliferating. So, you know, it's our important job in the meditation to be mindful of restlessness. You know, to make that effort to be mindful of the agitated, the proliferating mind. And of course, you know, as we're working with this on the level of a hindrance, you know, as we, you know, it's not enough just to see that there's proliferation in the mind, that there's agitation in the mind. You have to bring insight. You know, there's no concentration without insight. So, you know, very simply, of course, is seeing the restlessness as a hindrance, seeing that there's drawbacks in that proliferated thinking. And sometimes we can activate that insight very simply by asking, is this useful? Is this thinking preventing me from developing meditation, from developing the path? Because the mind's not going to settle down to the degree that we need to settle it down so that we can truly have tranquility unless you bring some insight. You know, you can keep pulling the mind back to the breath. You can, you know, really try to stay with the breath. But ultimately, concentration is only going to develop, tranquility is only to develop to the degree that it can develop if we bring some insight to the thinking. Is it useful? You have to bring insight into the thinking. You know, as we begin to still the mind by bringing insight into the thinking and seeing that there's drawbacks in the thinking and cultivating disenchantment with the thinking, then we begin to be able to move into a place of tranquility in the meditation. So we still the body, we still the mind, and we can come into this place of inner stillness, inner silence, inner stillness, where the mind is stilled and the body is stilled. And this is when concentration really begins to develop to that point where it becomes really useful, and we begin to really understand the great benefits of it, the happiness of concentration, the qualities of well-being and ease and contentment. Now, other things that we can do and that are essential in terms of developing tranquility, other causes that are essential in terms of developing tranquility, is not only to work with the heedfulness in this of the thinking in the meditation, but to work with heedfulness of thinking outside of the meditation, you know? Because until we can still the mind to some extent, be heedful of our thinking off the cushion, we're not going to be able to do it on the cushion. This is what the Buddha found, that he couldn't get his sitting meditation to the point that he needed to get to it it to get to where he could have liberating insight until he purified his thinking off the cushion. Because you can try and try as you might in the meditation to still the mind, you know, but if you're not making an effort to do that off the cushion, you're only going to get so far. So, you know, working with the proliferating mind, working with your thinking, working with the unskillful thinking, thoughts of aversion and desire in all postures is critical. You know, so being heedful of our thinking as we go throughout the course of the day, in all our endeavors, in all our activities, seeing our thinking, you know, and asking, are there drawbacks in this thinking? What are the consequences of this thinking? You know, of course, we talk about this all the time in terms of the Buddhist teachings on two sorts of thinking, to abandon the unskillful thinking and then to cultivate the skillful thinking, because this is an important part of the development of stillness in the mind, is it's not enough just to develop disenchantment with the unskillful thinking, that has to be replaced with something. So we begin to develop skillful thinking. We do this on the cushion, of course, in terms of intention and brightening the mind. We have to do this off the cushion too. We have to replace the unskillful thinking with the skillful thinking. Skillful thinking in support of what? Stilling the mind. So thoughts of love, compassion, and certainly the thoughts of appreciation, gratitude, and brightness lead to the stilling of the mind. So I mean, just think about that. If you went throughout your day, you know, think about all the, I had some really agitated thoughts today. You know, it created a lot of agitation. I could feel it when I sat down here. So we have to work with that and then again replace those thoughts with more skillful thoughts. Another very important element in developing tranquility is to refrain from harmful actions. Because if we're taking harmful actions, particularly in terms of not following the precepts, that's going to cause agitation in the mind, and to some extent, there's not much you can do about that. You know, that's going to be a karmic result of taking harmful actions, is there's going to be agitation in the mind. You know? So, you know, this is one of the reasons why following the precepts is so important. Because if we don't follow the precepts, we're going to be in an agitated state. You know, we all kind of know that. You lie, you engage in illicit sex, you speak harmfully to another person, there's going to be agitation in your mind. And that's just a consequence, you know? There's no getting around that. I mean, we can take that and compound it, and you know, but there's going to be some consequence of that. So refraining from harmful actions, and also refraining from actions that may not fall into being a breach of precepts, but that are still unskillful. There's many ways to speak that aren't harmful, that are unskillful. So we have to be particularly pay attention to our speech, because the degree to which our speech is unskillful will be correlative to agitation. I mean, you all know that, right? You know, you've spoken in certain ways, you've had arguments with people, you've spoken divisively, whatever you've done, you've spoken unskillfully and it causes agitation. So if we're going to develop tranquility, if we're going to develop composure, this is an important element. What did Ajahn Phulang like to say? If you can't control the mouth, you can't control the mind. And then lastly, in terms of these important elements that I'm mentioning today, is paying attention to the people that we associate with. So the number one external factor in developing tranquility is refraining from associating with people who are agitated. For some of us, that may be difficult, you know, at work or family. But, you know, it's really important. You know, it's really important for us to refrain. And it's one of the reasons, you know, on retreat or in a class, why we're able to develop more tranquility is because most of the people there are meditating and practicing, and there isn't that quality of agitation. You know, it's one of the reasons, you know, I had to tell this, you know, in the beginner's class I'm teaching at the Open Center now, like explain to them why I ask, I beseech you, when you come into the room each week for the class, to turn off all your electronic devices. You know? And it's palpable. You know, it's palpable. I mean, you can see people who are so agitated, you know, for these few minutes before the class starts, you know, they come in and they don't have their agitation, their device with them, and you can see that they're starting to develop a less agitated mind. So if you've got somebody who's always on the phone, that might be somebody that maybe isn't so good to hang out with. I mean, a classical way of, you know, that the monks would talk about, you know, in terms of looking at people and deciding who you want to spend time with or not is, you know, does the person talk a lot? You know? You know, those are tend to be people that we want to try to avoid if we can. You know, people who are gabbing. Because that's usually an indication of agitation, and it certainly leads to agitation for us. So what we're asked to do is, again, as tranquility begins to arise, as we learn to still the body and still the mind, tranquility begins to arise and we notice that it's arisen. We notice that it's there. Like even right now, you may notice that there's tranquility there. And you can touch into it. So you cultivate it by touching into it. You know, we talked about this a lot on the retreat, how often there's tranquility, but we don't touch into it. So, you know, there's often tranquility in the sitting, and then there's often tranquility in your life, you know, that you feel in the body. So tranquility is something you feel in the body. Generally, you know, you're going to feel it at certain places in the body, maybe one place in the body where you can feel that quality of stillness, silence in the body. There may be agitation in other places in the body, but as the body and the mind begin to still, then you begin to notice places in the body where there's stillness, silence, composure, tranquility. And we begin to learn in the sitting and outside of the sitting to recognize those places and to put our minds on them. Because what do we tend to be doing most of our lives is focusing on our agitation. Focusing on the agitation in the body and the agitation in the mind. So we're learning to still the body and the mind and focus on tranquility. What we focus on will develop. So, you know, it's like we say, be tranquil, be calm. Well, how do you do that? Well, there's a very specific process of skill that enables us to develop tranquility. You know, and it culminates in being able to be mindful of tranquility as it's there and as it's arisen and manifest, and put our attention to it in the service of cultivating it, deepening it, and developing causes for its re-arising. So this cultivation of this factor is, needless to say, key, elemental in the development of the path. It's elemental in our efforts to alleviate suffering and to find a greater happiness in our lives. So let's just close our eyes for a minute.